he said, she said, or technically speaking and simply put.
Hello, Tracy.
Hello, Corey.
You are so overjoyed this morning because we woke up and it's snowing outside, and I know that you just love the snow.
When I was a kid, I loved the snow, but now I'm not over the moon about it. Keep it on the mountains. I get the skiers, and you know, people who like winter sport are all so excited about it, which I'm excited for them. But no, I just think snow is a pain in the hoo-ha, and it's dangerous. So, you know, keep it on the mountains and everybody can enjoy it up there. But for me, I don't like that. So there you have it. So I'm in a mood today.
You're a female. You're always in a mood. Hopefully, most of the time, it's good.
That, you know, that was kind of a sexist comment, I think. Nonetheless, I'm trying to contain myself is what I'm doing. By you know, because I'm trying to be nice, even though it's snowing. You know,
but
that's
you could
hard
also to say to me, you're a male. And therefore, you're always in a mood because aren't we both organisms with moods? Aren't we always in some kind of a mood? So although I was being specific to females, you could retaliate and say the same is true for a male. And I'd have no choice but to say you're right.
Yeah, so yeah.
But I still say you're in a mood.
Yeah, because keep it up. Keep it up, and I'm really going to be in a mood.
By your own confession. Okay, so hello, everyone. This is He Said, She Said, November 2018. We're sliding down to the bottom of the barrel. This is like coming to the end of the year. And this is time for everyone to consider the best that they can be. And we've got some good stuff today on our show. So, Tracy, what's cooking?
What's cooking is an almond flour crust. Yummy almond flour crust. You had decided that you wanted me to make something for your birthday, so I made a really nice pumpkin crumble. Now, you got to know that I have not baked in years, have I? I haven't done any baking at all. We just don't do baking anymore, or I don't do baking. So this was a new one for me. I have made the almond flour crust before, but not for a really long time. And when it comes to baking or cooking, for that matter, it's all about timing and the precision with the ingredients. And, you know, I just am not there anymore. I just make protein and salads. So it's pretty simple for me now. But this is a really, really nice crust, and you quite enjoyed it, didn't you?
I did, and I actually participated in the crust making process.
Yes, you did.
And I don't see what's so hard about it. To me, it's pretty straightforward.
Well, it's all about that timing when it gets into the oven, but never mind that. You can make this a sweet crust or a savory crust. Now, you opted out not to add anything to it. Sweet-wise, because it was a pumpkin crumble, so it was more of a sweet crust that we wanted, but you wanted no sweetener in the crust. I personally found it a little bit not sweet enough, but you were quite over the moon about it. You quite enjoyed it. So I will put this on the website. You can make it a sweet or a savory. So the next time I do this, I'm going to make it more savory and add some maybe oregano or basil, some garlic powder, onion powder to this mix, and try to make a pizza out of it and just see what happens. Anyway, you start off with 2.5 cups of blanched almond flour. If you want to add maybe a third of a cup of coconut sugar or erythritol, you can. You don't have to. 1/4 teaspoon of sea salt. You can add 1/4 cup of ghee or unsalted butter. Now, if you don't want to go that dairy route, you can use coconut oil. However, the crust will have a coconut oil flavor to it. 1 large egg. If you don't want to go the egg route, you add a little bit more of the oil or the ghee or the unsalted butter. And an option, if you want to go sweet, you go 1/2 teaspoon of the vanilla extract. So what you want to do is you want to preheat the oven to 350 degrees. Now, I doubled this recipe because I was making a big, big pumpkin crumble for Corey, and we had company as well, and they all totally enjoyed it. So I'm going to make this. This is just for a 9-inch round pan. So a 9-inch round pan or square. You want to grease it very well. You can use parchment paper if you like. However, I just greased it with the butter. In a large bowl, you want to mix together the almond flour, the sweetener that you choose, a little bit of sea salt. Add in the melted ghee and the egg or the coconut oil. And if you're using vanilla, stir in the vanilla with the butter before you add it to the dry ingredients. Now, as you saw, Corey, the dough became dry and crumbly, right? Do you remember doing that?
Yes.
Okay. Then you just keep pressing it and stirring it and molding it. I think you started doing it with your hands, didn't you? You got right in there. And I know you washed your hands before we did this, I hope. Did you? I told you to anyway. And you can use a food processor with this if you like. Now what you want to do, you want to press this dough into the bottom of the prepared pan. You can flute the edges if you like. And if it crumbles when you're doing this, just press it all back together again. And what you want to do is you want to poke holes into the bottom surface using a fork. This will prevent the crust from bubbling up. Then now you want to watch this as you do it. You want to bake it for about 10 to 12 minutes until it's lightly golden. And you keep your eye on it as well. Don't forget and go off and do something else. And then you take it out of the oven and you've pre-baked the crust. And then it's ready to add any filling that you want into it. And then you bake it again for whatever you want to do. Next time, I'm going to give you another recipe. I might try the pizza crust, make the pizza, or I might share with you the pumpkin crumble. But I really think this is a really great alternative to using different flours. This is almond flour that we're using. And wasn't it fabulous?
Yeah, I want to mention a couple of things. Number one, almond flour, like I want to focus on ketogenic desserts from now on, right? Because we have consciously decided to minimize our carbohydrate intake. Because we're getting older, our metabolic rate's slowing down. We don't want to gain any excess body fat. And people are asking themselves, why am I gaining body fat? I'm eating exactly the same. Hello, right? Because your body is not the same and maybe you're less active. You got to keep the activity level up. But anyway, flour is typically high in carbohydrates from wheat or grains. And almonds are high in fat. I keep telling everybody that nuts and seeds are not high in protein. They're high in fat. They're very high in fat. Like almonds, probably off the top of my head, maybe 75, 80% fat. So if they're 80% fat, you got 20% caloric value remaining. How much of that is carb and how much of that is protein? Well, we got some protein in there. So very low carb. And of course, you talked about the sweetener, erythritol, right?
Right.
Which is a sugar alcohol produced from glucose by fermentation with a yeast. And it ends up being about 70% as sweet as sucrose, which is table sugar, but it's almost non-caloric. So is there a time and a place to use these sugar alcohols? Yes, if you want to move in towards these low-carb alternatives. And I certainly do not eat pumpkin crumble on a regular basis. But it was my birthday. Why not celebrate? Because there is a time, as the Greeks so proudly proclaimed, life is a celebration, right?
I agree.
And we had a good amount of friends and a little party. And it just, you know, hit the top of the ceiling the way we thought it would. I knew it was going to be good. So anyway, that's my theme on the crust. And I think that you could use this for a lot of other things. And of course, if you added the coconut sugar, which is probably a better alternative than regular sucrose, that's going to raise your carbohydrate profile. So you wouldn't want to use that if you are really focused on keeping those carbs down, which so many people need to do because they're never going to lose that stored body fat until they reduce the insulin. And the way you reduce the insulin in your blood as it circulates is to reduce your carbohydrate intake.
That was pretty good. So that's I think we're on to something here. And I'm sure that a lot of our listeners have probably used the almond flour crust before. But as I mentioned, I did it used it before in a few things. I added it in, but I have never used it as an actual crust. And I haven't baked in years. So I'm getting back with the program again. So I think I might try pizza this time. I'm really excited about it. I've had a craving for pizza these days.
Yes, okay. And I want you to try that cauliflower.
Yes, I'm going to try that too.
Let's try that sometime too.
Yeah, I'm going to try that too. I will for sure. So there you have it. Try something new. If you're into baking and you want something a little sweet on the sweet side, then use that nice almond flour. Not almond meal, but almond flour. The almond meal is a little more coarse, but you can use it. It's an alternative. You can use it.
Yep. And in this situation, we used pumpkin, which I believe was sweetened with honey. So that raises the carbohydrate profile as well. You could use an alternative sweetener. And then you put in a whack of coconut cream, which again raises the fat profile. So the overall glycemic load on this, if you look at it mathematically, that's what you've got to understand. The glycemic effect, the glycemic index of every single participating food individually, and you add it all up through calculation, and you come up with a glycemic load of that particular food, and then determine whether or not the profile is what your target range is. And that's how you do it. And after a while, you stop counting and using math. You just do it naturally because you get into the swing of things. And that's how...
Exactly.
That's important to live like that, because you got to do it casually and with ease. Otherwise, it's just a constant struggle.
Absolutely. I hear you.
Okay, well, that was good for that one. Let's move on now. Who was our last month's special guest?
Last month's special guest was Mr. John Huddard. John Huddard is an electrical project manager specializing in high voltage substations on large industrial projects. After completing his electrical apprenticeship, he continued to work on many construction projects spanning over 40 years. John is also a high-end sports performance coach and master's athlete. In addition to coaching and participating in several extreme sports, including hang gliding, mountain biking, and sport bike motorcycle riding, John teaches alpine ski racing, and he helps young athletes achieve their personal best. For more information about John's bio, please see our website. Well, yes, we met John through one of my dance students. He's the husband of one of my dance girls at a party that the partners and hubbies were invited to. You and John got on like a house on fire, and it's been a great friendship ever since. And speaking of houses, John and his wife built a beautiful home in the Vernon Mountains. It's rustic, sophisticated, and it really is a work of art, isn't it?
Absolutely beautiful. The craftsmanship is phenomenal. I'm just amazed that people can actually do that, and they do it naturally. It's almost like watching an artist paint from their mind. It's just absolutely, or watching a musician play the guitar without looking at music. I find it absolutely amazing.
It was a wonderful interview, and I just knew that he had a lot to offer. Over the time that we've spent with him, and we've went to their place for dinner several times, and he was chatting about himself, and I said, he really has a lot to offer as an SNU, a special guest interview. I thought one of the interesting things was how his dad had to learn how to ski in order to complete his work job on the mountain. Isn't that great? So John ski raced as a kid downhill. He says it's a process. He didn't look at it as extreme. And after having done the Weasel, which is an actual downhill slope in Whistler, at 80 miles per hour, this slope is, he said after that, it made everything seem easy. I can't even fathom that. That's just like way too crazy for me.
It gets really scary. Like when you're skiing really fast, it can be really scary. You know, I'm okay as a skier, but I'm not at the level that John is by any means. Or some of these guys that they're like, you put them on skis and it's like we're born in that environment, you know, and they just wiggle around and dodge and go through here and that and fly down and it's great. But when you're doing it yourself and going down a steep hill, it can get pretty scary.
Well, I don't think they think about it. It didn't start like that. They had to work their way towards it. So it's like he said, it was a slow process. He worked his way towards it. And also now hang gliding is another extreme sport that he participated in. And this truly is an extreme sport. I remember when I lived in Nelson many, many years ago, guys were jumping off the mountain and a lot of them got really hurt and ended up in wheelchairs, unfortunately. The sport has evolved today, he says, much safer than it was years ago. He had his share of accidents in this sport, and he wasn't prepared or he didn't have the know-how. But he says after a few accidents, he realized that he needed to learn more about the sport, which is probably a really good idea.
And yeah, I don't like wearing parachutes. They didn't used to wear parachutes, but now they wear parachutes.
Yeah, yeah. And a friend of ours used to teach hang gliding, and he said he just couldn't do it anymore. He says because the insurance was too high.
The liability insurance.
Yeah. So, I mean, I can imagine it being absolute bliss when you're out there. I mean, that's something I would totally love to do, but I'm too much of a scaredy cat. Anyway, then he was on the mountain bike riding, and he started this about 35 years ago. He says the evolution of the sport has evolved and grown with much better equipment, and this sport even kids can do, like the whole families can do. And we've seen the, I mean, they go like a bat out of hell. It's unbelievable. He got involved in mountain biking so he'd be in better shape to ski, because it's all about skiing for him. He said the cardio and legwork involved is unbelievable, balance and coordination as well. And he also, to this day, he rides at night with headlights in rough terrain. He calls this his anti-Alzheimer's ride. So he keeps his brain alert all the time. And you got to be on guard. You have to be really awake and aware of your surroundings when you're going at the speeds that like that, don't you think?
Yes. And I would say, okay, if you're at the level, if you're at the extreme far end where you're actually wearing a helmet with a light and you're mountain biking at nighttime, is like super risky, I would say that you're a freaking diehard. You know, that's like being in the gym as a gym rat, a true gym rat, right? You just show up. You're always there. You never miss a workout. You feed on it. You love it. You do it. And that's what these guys are like. And then when I did go mountain biking with John, because he invited me for a session, it was great. I had a lot of good time. My ass was just so sore. That's another thing you got to be careful of, is the equipment that you need is very important, and it takes time to, you know, get used to it. But the level of skill required is phenomenal. And then I noticed there's a culture. When we went down to the bottom, there was a whole bunch of people, and they've got all their gear, and they're all into it. And these guys are like really at a high level. And a lot of them ski. In fact, almost all of them, because when we went to watch a movie at Silver Star during the summer, they had an outdoor movie. It was really cool. We went into the pub for a while before it started. You always got to have a couple of beer before. Anyway, and I discovered that all of these people that were there were both mountain bikers and skiers. It's definitely something that they combine. So that's great.
Exactly. But he says he's the only one that he knows that's got that hang gliding experience in there. And he relates, like, you went chopping wood with him because he has a wood fire in his beautiful home. And so you went chopping wood with him, like he chops trees down and then he chops the wood. And he says he relates chopping wood to skiing. When the wood is in for the fire, it's time for skiing. That's the time of the year. So he's all excited about that. He ski coached for many years, and he said the one-on-one with the athletes builds bonds and friendships that he's learned, which he really enjoys about. He says even today he's friendship with his athletes. He learned to shut up. He said sometimes coaches talk too much. He's coached for many years and on one-on-one with athletes, which he really loves because he builds bonds and friendships with these young athletes. Even today, he's still friends with some of these athletes. And as a coach, he says one of the things that he learned was to shut up. He says sometimes coaches talk too much. So you want to really choose your words wisely. All athletes learn differently, so you need to learn how they learn. And then you can work with them on that. And he tells each athlete one thing, and then they can work on it. So that's very interesting. As a coach, that's one of the things that he took away from teaching. And then you asked him what makes a good athlete, and he says they really have to want it. You have to really want it and have a passion for it. And you have to have a certain amount of skill and talent. But wanting it is the most important, right? Would you agree with that?
Yeah, the desire has to be relatively strong, and I would say burning. And otherwise, you're not going to show up and do the grunt work for the long term. You might stick it out for a month or two, and then you realize, oh my God, like learning how to play this guitar is not as fun as I thought it would be. Or anything else that you look at when you're watching the news or TV or looking at a doc or whatever on the computer, you're looking at something, it looks incredible, it looks wonderful. But you know how to get there? It takes a long time, usually, to achieve the level of performance that some of these guys have that makes it look so inviting, right? So if you don't have that burning desire, that true desire, because you can't download desire, you can't buy it, you can't inject it. You either have it or you don't. And I'm fascinated by people that do. I don't care what they're into, right? Anything. There's all kinds of things that people are into. And some of them are just like totally engrossed and driven by this impossible to identify force inside of them that's kind of like just alive and pushing them forward. And a lot of people don't have this and want it, and they can't figure out how to get it. So that's an interesting phenomenon, I think.
Yeah. And John is 66 years old today, and he says he's in better shape than he's been in a long time, and in some better shape than some young folks. He says he takes supplements, and in particular Chinese supplements, to help with his testosterone levels. He likes the mental state that the extreme sports gives him at his age. Like he says, it's his anti-Alzheimer's. What is important to him is to keep up and do the sports as you age. And what he likes about it is the relationships, the camaraderie, the people connection that help him stay motivated. Like you said, when you get down the hill, then you had all these guys and they all got together and you enjoyed that part of it. You could see how the camaraderie. And he says that these young people help motivate him and he helps motivate young people. So, you know, the whole thing is just it's wonderful to have met him, and I'm so glad that we did an SNU with him. So thanks, John, for a fantastic interview.
Yep, and absolutely. And I'll just finish off with this. Try something if you think it might be something enjoyable or intriguing. And just because you try it, like, I liked mountain biking, but I'm not going to go out and buy a mountain bike and start mountain biking. I have other things going on. I like to be in the kind of shape where I could do any sport anytime by invitation, like say a friend invites me to go golfing, but I'm not a quote golfer unquote. I don't have my golf bags and all that stuff that you need, and I don't belong to a golf course or nothing like that. But I have my things that I'm into. You can't be into everything, but it's nice to be in the kind of fitness shape that you could function and by invitation go participate in a sport with a friend to create bondship, to create friendship and get a connection that you never really have to pursue past that. But once you've done it, like when I chopped wood with John, like, let's go to a city of 2 million people, and in that city, how many people chop wood on a regular basis and have a wood-burning fire? No. So when you get out of the sticks, that's more common. Well, you go out and chop wood for the day or, you know, meet someone in the gym, and you sweat with them. You work with them. There's a bond that's created for friendship, and there's nothing like that. So I really enjoy that, and that's how I connect with people. And I always have when I've traveled is – start working with people, doing things with people, even if you don't necessarily want to continue doing that for the rest of your life. At least you connect with them, and that opens trade and discussion and friendship.
Great. Awesome. Are you done?
Yeah. Shut up. Okay, moving on. What's your hot topic?
My hot topic is, as the saying goes, be kind to unkind people. Now, I never used to like that saying. However, as I mature, notice I didn't say age, as I age, as I mature, I realize what it means to me, that particular saying, be kind to unkind people. So if someone is unkind to me, I don't have to behave like them and be unkind to them, because then I'm just as bad as they are. I'm an unkind person then. But I think that's what that means to me. I just kind of realized that a while back, because I never did like that saying. I thought, if somebody's going to be really like a dick to me, what am I going to do? I'm going to be a dick back to them because they're being a dick. But I'm going like, no, I don't need the stress in my life. And maybe they might, you know, who knows who's got a gun or a knife or might punch me out or something like that. Just walk away, leave it. Just leave it alone, you know? And I know how you feel about it, Corey.
Yep. Well, I play the neutral role. and don't participate in the madness. So by experience, I've learned that if you engage with somebody looking for a fight, if you engage with anybody that is pushing you to your edge, chances are you're going to create a lot more trouble for yourself if you do, not necessarily for them. They're already troublemakers. They're looking for trouble. They want to engage. They're looking for a fight. And they're all around us all the time. It could be in a shopping center, at the cash out. It could be going to the post office. It could be walking down the street. It could be in a coffee shop or at the gym, anywhere. So this is an element of discretion. Okay, there are times when you have to stand up and face the challenge. You have to.
Right.
You have no choice, especially if you've got some scruples and some balls, as they say, or the element of courage. There's times when you have to face it. But most of the time, I'd say 95% of the time, you can move away from harm. You can step out of the way of the moving truck. So I don't fight fire with fire most of the time. What I do is I become water to that fire. I become a bump on the log. You ever tried having an argument with a bump on a log? Just sit there, jump up and down and scream and yell at that bump on the log, and that bump on the log just sits there. Doesn't do nothing.
Kind of like what I do when I'm listening to you right now.
Yes.
Anyways, I get where you're coming from. But you know how we always tell our kids, don't forget to say please. Don't forget to say thank you. What did you say? Did you say thank you? Well, you know, this also goes for adults as well. You know, what about please and thank yous? You always have to make a point of saying please and thank yous as adult, not just reminding your children. Remind yourself. And I think that in my own personal behavior, I will create a really great, wonderful community around me if my behavior is on target, if I'm doing these things myself. If I'm kind, if I'm saying my please and my thank yous, and my consciousness is towards the good, my intention is good, the community of people that I surround myself with will be the same. And it is working. It's working for me. I have a wonderful community of friends and people around me. So there you have it. That's my hot topic.
Yeah, good stuff. Okay, so what's your final word?
My final word is by thefunnyplace.net. Politeness has become so rare that some mistake it for flirtation.
Okay, good. So every time we do this, you're going to say it three times from now on until you get it right, okay?
Oh, never mind. Goodbye. Bye, Lynn.